Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 751, Meridian Divide, recorded live on September 10th, 2020. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your co-host, Duststorm.
I'm your other co-host, Godzilla T.
And unfortunately, we don't have DJ or Chuck or Craig tonight, but we do have another animated special guest with us, GT.
We have Bob.
Bob. Hi, Bob.
Dust finally introduced himself to me. Nom, nom, yes. Nom, nom, nom.
Yes, I have finally completed my homework assignment and watched Aliens, actually yesterday. And turns out I had actually seen part of it before. I'd seen the tail end of the movie, like maybe the last 10 or 15 minutes, and I didn't know it was Aliens.
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew you had at least watched some of them.
Right.
Or some of it, because I've seen it on TV multiple times.
Yeah. But I finally watched it from front to back, and have a much deeper appreciation for just how much influence there is on the Halo franchise from the Aliens franchise.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing where you see where the inspirations come from.
It really
for
is.
For different things. You know, I've seen, you know, just things that have spawned from movies or TV shows or something like that. I mean, you know, some of it is just still fantasy like Halo.
Right.
But I've also seen things that have become practical, that have actually become real objects. Think about it. Just for an example, the communicator in Star Trek.
I didn't know if you were sticking to just the Alien franchise or if you were talking about sci-fi
in general. Well, just in general.
But yes.
Sci-fi in general. Or even, it doesn't even really have to be sci-fi. Any movie. But
hang on, let me go get my Motorola Razor.
Yeah. Flip phone, anybody?
Flip phones.
Anyway.
Yep.
Boop, beep me up, Scotty. But yeah, it's interesting where a lot of these artists find inspiration.
Yeah, it really is. And I didn't realize how much inspiration there was.
And then they just figure out how they can legally rip the stuff off. Oh.
Right. Like how much of the vehicles and the spaceships were influenced from, like, the one big spaceship that they travel in is very indicative of a frigate.
Mm-hmm.
I see inferences of the Pelican, of mm-hmm. the Warthog, of the tank, mm-hmm. of the Scorpion tank. Like, I see elements of that in there. And then I think it was either the atmospheric transfiguration or power station kind of had, seemed to influence some of the Forerunner design type stuff. So, and of course, there's the Johnson character in there.
Always. As always.
Yep. So, yeah, there was a lot that I learned. Like, I knew Aliens, like that franchise, had influence into Halo just from all the interviews and discussions about it. But I never just realized how much of an influence there was. So, there's that.
You have learned something new.
And we might have a breakdown of that for a podcast at some point.
When we get really desperate for information.
There you go.
Or for topics.
Right.
Because I have a feeling it's going to be a dry period for a while.
Hopefully info will ramp up here.
I hope they're able to adjust their marketing to fit the delay.
Yes.
To still market the game, but not oversaturate.
Yes.
In other words, give away too much of it.
And it's going to be interesting with, like, I don't know if they had any kind of ARGs planned or any of that kind of promotional material, like what they did with Hunt the Truth or whatnot, but it'd be kind of cool to see some of that stuff.
Actually, with the delay, a Hunt the Truth or an ARG would be great to fill the time.
Yeah.
And it, three for it three, doesn't really have to relate to the story of the game.
No, not directly. I mean, it'd be nice to have a couple of like connecting points, but it doesn't have to tie directly into it. Like the,
it could tie into Brohammer.
That would be interesting.
Like how the hell he got stuck in the Pelican.
I have a feeling we'll find that out. Or in the
if
game.
He's really, if he's really related to Fullhammer.
That would be kind of cool. That'd be interesting. All right, so we are going to jump on into things, starting off with our Podtacular update. And as we normally do, we hand over to GT for how we did with Fraggin' Friday. So, GT?
We did a lot with Fraggin' Friday. We had a lot of fun and some big team fiesta. We moved right into, we actually moved into customs pretty quick. We tried Warzone, but Warzone wasn't being friendly to large groups, so.
Yeah, we tried searching for, what, 3 or 4 minutes before we said no? Because we had nine.
Yeah, we had the weird number where it just, it couldn't find us a match. So we just moved into customs. I cursed 343 several times because I couldn't find the stupid games. This weekend, among other things that I need to get done, I need to go back through my customs and rearrange the stuff, clean out some dead files, things like that.
Re-download fixes and whatnot. Because some of the game types that you tried to load up seem to just, I guess, were broken from an update?
Probably.
Or something like that?
Broken from a Forge update 6-12 months ago, because I hadn't played them in a while. So, you know, the game types,
well,
just,
even
sometimes the game types and the maps just get broken, so.
Even some of the ones that we've played recently, like in the last couple of months, seem to break.
Like I said, they may have pushed out a small update to Forge or to the game in general that has broken some stuff. And I just have to go back through. And the ones that I can fix, I'll see if I can fix because I like, you know, I enjoy playing the games. But some of them, they're just games that honestly we've never played. And I was trying to bring in some new stuff, and of course I only had half the information, so yay.
So yay, more trial and error.
Yes. I have to sit down. This is one of the complaints that I've always had with Halo 5's custom games. There's just no rhyme or reason to them in their organization.
No, there's not.
There isn't. I mean, it doesn't even go by the last one you downloaded half the time, too. I mean, that's the most common one that it uses, just the order of download. Okay, that's fine, but it doesn't always do that.
No.
So that is one of my hopes for Infinite, is a good organization system for custom games.
Well, in every other Halo game, at least for game,
well, most of the other Halo games, it was sorted by map.
Right, for the maps, by the and then map, the game it modes, it was sorted by the base game mode type.
Right.
So Slayer, Capture the Flag, King of the Hill.
Right.
Or which, Ball, you know, I guess, in Halo 5's case.
I don't mind the way they've done it, as far as, at least with Halo 5's engine, you were able to have a custom thumbnail. So you could give the game, the map and the game type the same thumbnail, which makes them easy to find. The problem is they're not in any kind of order.
Right.
So, you know, like you're looking for a game type. Well, you have to remember what the picture is because it's not sorted by name or anything. And of course, the names are so small, it's hard to really scroll through and quickly and find them.
Yep. And you have to load every page.
The whole page thing, that annoys me. I would just prefer just a list to scroll. You know, just push up and down on the D-pad. That's,
yeah, 343 has like not that. Done file sharing well.
I mean, in Halo 4, they did a good job. That one is not bad.
Right, but MCC in Halo 5.
MCC is not that bad. MCC is better than Halo 5. It still uses the map and then the game type. Its only problem is just lack
of
capacity.
When you're setting up a game, yeah. Well, yeah, there's that too. But like if you're going through your files, they're not sorted in any. They're only sorted by game. Or no, they're not even sorted by game.
Well, in MCC, they're sorted by the map they were built on. And then once you get in there, their map, they're sorted alphabetically.
No, I'm talking not if you're setting up a game, but if you're managing your like save files.
Oh, yeah. If you're
like that interface is.
Yeah.
Similarly bad to how Halo 5 is. But anyways.
Mm-hmm. Tangent.
And we had a couple of guests join us as well from Bobby's friends or.
Yeah. Bobby brought in a couple of new people. Sounds like they had fun. They weren't
person
and
we threw some interesting customs, some new customs they hadn't played, and they seemed to really enjoy it. Uh-huh. Especially Hogs from Heck.
Oh yeah, had a lot of fun with that one.
And Speed.
That's Speed and Hogs from Heck are always crowd favorites.
Mm-hmm. And then there was another one that we played that I don't normally win that I won.
You won one?
Yeah, believe it or not. I want a custom somehow.
That's usually King Louis that wins.
I know, right? Oh, was it Vehicle Fiesta? Yeah, it may have been Vehicle Fiesta.
It's possible.
But yeah, King Louis is usually the minigame master in our group. So if you ever join a Fraggin' Friday and King Louis there, there's a pretty good chance that he's winning at least a handful of the custom games if we get to that point in the night.
Be prepared to come in second.
Yeah. On the Achieving Halo side of things, did not actually do one for this past weekend. I forget why. There's a reason why, but I'm blanking on why. No website posts this week. As far as company commendations go, though, nothing new that we've acquired so far. We are still getting pretty close with getting splatters. We are about 250 away from those, so really close to that being done. And then the next closest two are still getting an enemy Spartan kill with a standard weapon and getting headshots.
Headshot.
Boom. Headshot. As far as Tales from the Foxhole, we had a massive dump from Bobby in the Xbox Club. So if you want to go watch about 17 clips or so over on the Xbox Club, then...
You know, I meant to look that, but I haven't been able to get the Xbox or Xbox Club to load all week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have you tried the website or through the app?
I haven't tried the website. I've just tried through the app.
Okay, you might try through the website.
Now it seems like it's going to work.
It's not... I find that some of the stuff within the app isn't always stable.
Yeah.
So you might try the website.
Jeez, Bobby. Why don't you spread those out a little bit?
Right? Oh, that's right. This past weekend would have been PAX, so there were some virtual parties I was attending.
Yeah, thanks for letting me know, by the way. I found out about Recarbecue like 20 hours after it was over.
There wasn't a lot of people that joined on there, to be honest.
I love it. He tags like 15 different people except me.
You weren't the only one that I got called out that I left out.
Well, the other people I can understand. I mean, you see me every week.
This is true. I'm sorry.
I don't even think he called out DJ, did you?
No, because he said that he wasn't going to be... He was tagged by someone else, and he said he was DJing.
Yeah, I kind of figured that.
So, but, yep, Bobby had a spam of a lot of clips and images. Some campaign stuff, some multiplayer stuff. Lots of just really hilarious, how did that happen type of things. So, go feel free to check that out on... our Spartan company, podtaggler.com/Xbox for that. Over on the MCC playlist updates, or I guess we'll do Halo 5 playlist updates first. You want to let us know what we got coming up for the next couple of weeks, GT?
Sure. Let's see. On today, September, what is this, 10th? Yes, yep. September 10th. Core Play rotates in for Triple Team, and Warzone Assault goes live for the weekend.
Warzone Assault.
You brought that in there just to do that, didn't you?
No. I have a little thing of salt down here in case I ever eat food down here. Since we have
the salt
like
alone.
10 salt shakers in the house.
You know how many salt shakers I have? Just take a wild guess.
Two?
Zero.
Zero?
Zero. You know how much salt I have in my house?
I guess zero?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I've never been a salt person. To me, it always ruins the taste of food.
Well, like for seasoning some things, just like basic salt and pepper on.
The only thing that I enjoy salt on is tomatoes. Is if I'm eating a raw tomato, I'll put salt on that, and that makes a tomato just really pop. Anything else, if you put salt on it, all I'll taste is the salt.
Have you ever tried salt on avocado?
Yes. And okay. it ruins avocados for me.
Okay. Like steaks, no basic salt and pepper or ribs or potatoes?
I'll do pretty much any other spice except salt.
Huh.
I just.
Okay.
Well, I grew up, my dad had high blood pressure. So immediately salt got pretty much removed from our diet. But once it was gone, I never missed it.
Okay.
You know, even in restaurants, when I go to a restaurant, I can taste the salt that they put on stuff.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
People look at me weird when I tell them, do not use any salt. And in some cases, they can't because it's already premixed into their seasoning.
Right. Yeah.
Really, a salt checker on your desk? I mean, really?
Yeah, because sometimes I'm not a big pepper person.
You got ketchup down there, too?
No, just the salt. That's it.
I have peanut butter.
Okay, that works.
I was stocking up here the other night.
I'm not a black pepper person. I'm not a mustard or mayo person. Any other weird condiments that people think I'd be crazy if I didn't like?
I just think he's nuts because he likes Pizza Hut pizza.
Hey, majority vote on our poll was in favor of Pizza Hut.
Yeah. Everybody wears rose-colored glasses, too.
Mine are amber. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Got that nostalgia thing going for the pizza. Anyway.
Anywho. All right, so we've got that coming up this weekend. And then next weekend we have Foreigner Slayer rotating it for court play.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then to round out the month, we have Halo 3 Classic Throwback rotating in for Forerunner Slayer, and Dust's favorite, Warzone Turbo goes live. Partay!
I think I did actually hop on and play a game of Warzone Turbo this last time around.
Last month?
Yeah.
About time!
I think it was maybe one or two games.
I think you missed, the last 3 months?
At least, yeah. At least 3 months.
Actually, it'd be 4 times because they had 1 month that was on there twice.
Was on there twice or was it just extended?
No, it was 2 weekends.
Right, so it was just extended. Well, I guess technically came in, left for 2 days and came back. So
yeah.
Whenever they have a 5 week, 5 week and month, they sometimes do that.
Yeah.
Pence doesn't like pineapple? That's too bad. Pineapple's good, especially when it's fresh. When it's freshly cut, pineapple's good. Pineapple's really good.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got coming up for MCC?
Oh, on MCC, we got playlist changes.
Or what's technically here already.
Yeah, well, we won't notice. We won't mention that. Griff Ball rotates in. Duels leaves the party.
I'm okay with that. I'm personally okay with that.
Fine.
I'd much rather play Griffball than Duels.
Maybe there's some people that aren't.
And that's fine.
He's sympathetic already.
Just I personally am not. I'm not a Duels person. and then for the MCC development and flight updates, there's not a lot going on. They're mostly just trying to nail down all of the bugs and things that got reported for Halo 3 ODST. So they're finishing that up.
All 17,000 of them.
Right. And then they also hinted at a lot of other changes coming to MCC over the next 3 months or the final months in 2020. Wow, it's yes, kind of hard to imagine that the end of the year is almost here.
It's really irritating.
That too.
I have gotten nothing done this year. Or at least it seems like it.
I'll finally have a mission of a project done that I've been working on for this whole summer.
Yeah.
Within the month, episode 1 will go live of the Halo Mole. Check it out. Cool. TheHaloMole.com.
I saw that all the introductions were out again.
Yes. They got a little bit of a refresh.
By the way,
remaster. Thank you. Yeah, I'm producing a lot of it. But our first episode will be out at the end of the month. So it should be good. Yeah, if you guys would check it out, I would be much appreciated of that. I'll go ahead and put a link in the chat for people to go check it out. For anything else on the MCC update front, I don't think so. Oh, they hint at some other features that will be coming. Obviously, they didn't say anything that they haven't already said before from the end of the month update from last week that we discussed, but that was pretty much all they had. So nothing really new. On the social posts, we have a couple of new Today in Halos. You want to take those, GT?
Sure. Excuse me. September 4th, 2552, Lieutenant Wagner reports to UNSC High Command facility Bravo in Sydney regarding the fall of Reach.
Womp womp.
And during that conversation, he's accused of breaking some, you know, rules when it comes to random jumps.
The Cole also, protocol?
Yeah, it's it. Might have stretched it a little bit. Anyway, also September 9th, 2524, one Taylor Dutch Miles enlists in the UNSC Marine Corps, where he will eventually become an ODST and part of Alpha 9.
Yep. I like how on the image they have the little flavor text on there too now. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
On the MCC Pro Series side of things, we have the Pro Tournament number 2 for Halo 3 on PC happening this weekend. So if you are interested in that, then make sure you check that out on Saturday. That'll be happening around, I believe, 2 p.m. Eastern time is usually when they kick things off on stream. So make sure you check it out. We have one article to cover for this week, and it's not on Halo Waypoint. It's actually from Xbox. It seems like a lot of announcements are shadow drops because there's a leak, and then an hour later it's like, oh, we should make this official because it's leaking. So, yeah, someone leaked the...
Sounds like they need some stop leak. I'm by the store, I set you up.
But what's that, is it Flex Tape, where it has that commercial of someone just like taking a piece of tape?
Oh, Flex Seal. There you go.
Flex Seal.
Yeah, there you Flex go. Seal, Flex Tape, Flex Cock.
Well, I'm not sure about the last one.
No, they have Flex Cock.
No, I'm just my inner DJ.
I was gonna say something else, but it's not appropriate for this venue.
Yeah, yeah. So in that announcement, we have the launch date.
It's not appropriate for this venue.
Right. So we have the launch date of the consoles, which is going to be November 10th, 2020. And that will be for the Xbox Series X, which will retail at $500, and the Xbox Series S, which will retail at $300.
So we have the refrigerator and plankton from SpongeBob. Oh.
Or the Oreo.
Could yeah,
That was another thing that really jumped on things. So Xbox made the announcement. Oreo tweeted at them saying, huh, this looks somewhat interesting. And then eventually down the Twitter thread, there was an X, an S, and an X to make an Oreo sandwich.
Yep.
That's a really expensive Xbox Oreo sandwich.
I will be totally honest with everybody. When I saw the picture start popping up on Twitter, now keep in mind I was not paying attention to this at all. I was just kind of scrolling through Twitter. And I thought they were advertising the accessibility controller.
Yeah.
Tell me that it looks different.
I mean, at a quick glance, you are spot on. You are spot on. Well, and Pins, I am right there with you. I want an X, but I am not going to get one until there's a Halo-themed one because my computer can run those games just fine right now.
I will probably pick up an S because I've got two original Xboxes, Xbox Ones, and my Halo 5 one is getting kind of tired because I use that in my living room. But I've got to really dig into it and see what all it comes with. The one thing I need to find out if is it comes with the remote transmitter, whatever you call it, RF transmitter on it, like the Xbox S's do.
You're not talking about an IR blaster port. You're just talking about an IR
blaster. That's what it was.
But like an actual port, like a 3.5 millimeter port,
no, the actual blaster on the front of it, like the Xbox S has. The Xbox One S has an IR blaster.
I would be surprised if they didn't, because they have the little media controller, and that's IR.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it yet. All I've seen is what's been blasted all over Twitter, including Plankton.
I would consider the S.
I appreciate you giving me a link to the article, but I'm kind of busy at the moment. But
I would consider the S. The
pricing is spot on where I thought it was going to be.
Yep.
$499 and $299.
So I don't know if that GameSpot's article is technically correct, Pins, because someone came up after the fact and said that the CPU was the same. And this is saying the CPUs are different. So
I would not be surprised if there
were. Oh, no. And this is from February. Wait. No. This is from February 2018. No way. So, no, this is old. This is super old. No, you need an updated article. That's super old.
Like from February 2018. You know, I would not be surprised if the S was tweaked in some ways, but the way they're tagging it, it sounds like it's going to be just as wrong or just as strong as the X.
So I think there's not as much RAM and maybe the GPU's not the same, but it should be able to do. I think what I saw is you can do 1440p at 60 frames for all games.
Yeah, like I said, it wouldn't surprise me that there is
the CPUs aren't the same.
Caveat regarding the S as far as what you get.
So this is from the article. The CPUs are the same architecture, they're not the same speed. So the Xbox Series X is 3.8 gigahertz, the Xbox Series S is 3.6 gigahertz. But their AMD's in
really 0.2 of a gigahertz? That's gonna make a difference?
Yeah, not that much.
Yeah, I could see it.
GPU is 52 computational cores on the X and 20 computational cores on the S, so that's 12.5 teraflops
that makes
on the
difference.
Series X and 4 teraflops on the S. The Series X has 16 gigs GDDR6 RAM. The S will have 10 gigs. And then there's a 10 gig and 6 gig cache. Oh, wait. It's multiple RAM slots, I guess. Or different caches. There's a 10 gig and a 6 gig cache on the X, and then an 8 gig and a 2 gig cache on the S. Storage, 1 terabyte on the X, 512 on the S. The S does have the expansion card.
Cool. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to dig into it yet. So
the S is digital only, so no Blu-ray drive.
Right.
And everything else is the same. Figured. Yep. And everything else is the same.
I wonder if they have it. Does it say anything about the network port? If it's gigabit or not?
No, it did not.
I would imagine. I'd be surprised if it was, but
I'd be surprised if it was not gigabit.
Well, have you heard that they've got 2.5 gigabit network cards now?
I know they've existed.
Yeah. I just recently heard about them, so anyway.
There's 5 gigabit cards and there's 10 gigabit cards.
Well, yeah. Well, the 2.5 is, it's for people that want some extra transfer speed, but don't want to have to
chalk up a 10 gig card.
To rewire their entire house or business or anything like that. I've been thinking about doing something like that.
You have to have Cat 6 to take advantage of that, because Cat 5e only goes up to a gig.
They say Cat 5 can handle it. You're just limited in your length. I think it cuts.
Interesting.
It cuts your effective length in half or something like that. Or some, I forget what the actual specs were. But anyway.
And then Pens just dropped 5 gifted tier 1 subs. So thank you, Pens.
Way to go, money bags. I mean, Pens.
Right. Right, pretty much. Okay, that is all the official type news stuff that we have for this week. On to our community
before,
news.
Before we get off the tech subject, I would like to express my heartfelt condolences to anybody that bought a 2080 Ti. Just wanted to say that.
I really want one of those 3000 cards. Even the 3070, I'm contemplating.
I'm probably going to wait till October and I'm going to start shopping around for a 2080 Ti. Because honestly, that's more card than I need. I mean, hell, I haven't even maxed out my 1070 yet. Well, not for gaming at least. Video rendering, yes, but, and that would be the only reason I'd go to a 2080 is just to help with video rendering.
Well, right now my 1080 is fine because my monitor only has a 60 hertz refresh rate for 4K. So my 1080 can do that pretty well. But for how much of a steal the 3000 series cards are, it's like, it's a good price compared to some of the other GPUs.
It's a good price. But if I can pick up a 2080 for $150, it's a lot cheaper than a $500 card.
This is true, yeah.
And granted, you know, don't get me wrong, a 3070 is a nice card, and I would be very happy with it, but it's like 18 times more card than I need.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, I start editing 4K video? Yeah, okay. But anyway, next!
I don't think I'll be doing that for a while.
Not me.
On the community side of things, we've got Forge Hub with their community favorites for the month of August. So they have a couple of honorable mentions up here, but the top three, we have Gauntlet by Sega USA. Kind of reminds me of Halo 2 a little bit. Has a little bit of that kind of stony foreigner texture to it.
Mm-hmm.
Gauntlet is a multi-level arena which focuses on large elevation changes between the levels of the map. These vertical changes allow for the map to primarily be navigated through the use of jumping up, over, and across other vertical platforms rather than primarily hard routes. The map features a deep dungeon aesthetic with a chroma box ceiling for a gloomy, dark, and deep vibe that really makes you question just how deep in this dungeon are you. Gauntlet supports Slayer and Strongholds and is sure to fire great time for some deep, dark, vertical gameplay. Second place goes to Doomed Squash 023 with Villa Domus. Villa Domus is an aesthetic map of an ancient Roman villa and its surrounding city streets. This is my personal favorite this month, as I have 6 years of learning Latin under my belt, so I can for sure say that this is a very realistic representation of a Roman villa. Villa Domus in Latin translates to a townhouse, which is a high-class Roman citizen home. This map is perfect in case you were wanting to create that time machine Halo Machinima in 79 AD that so many of us have always wanted to create.
Yeah, because everybody wants to live in ancient Rome.
Apparently Foge does. And then first place is by Danelli 97, and this one's called Industry. With this being their first map posted on the site and winning a first place vote this month, I think we can assume to see great things in the future. Industry is an infection map that takes place in an industrial district and takes after the Victorian era aesthetic. A fantastic infection map to play with friends in the coming spooky months. So there you go. And then over on Haruspice's... Over on Haruspice's blog, we have recapping every Halo book in a sentence or two, featuring hot takes.
A sentence or two? Dozen.
Should I... Give me a book, and I'll read the little blurb that he does for it.
Fall of Reach.
Fall of Reach. Very first one. The one where it all started, and the reason we have an expanded universe to enjoy. Featuring better quality than all the adaptations and retellings that have followed. True to that. Give me another one.
Is it only books or is it stories?
It's only books.
Primordium.
Primordium. Oh, this is probably going to be interesting. The one where Mendicant Bias recruits an army of ancient human ghosts to stop Installation 07 from self-destructing so it can appear in Halo Infinite, featuring walking, roving, hiking, running, trekking, voyaging, wandering, roaming, migrating, wayfaring.
Yeah, that's it.
And give me the last one. We'll round it out with three.
Bad Blood.
Bad Blood. That's new blood. Bad Blood, Bad Blood. Da, 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 da. The one where they wrap up the reunion at the end of Halo 5 in a couple of pages, and then Buck tries recreating one of the Chief's many falls from orbit while hugging a Hurrigok, featuring a barbecue with the Sangili where Arby and the Chief reunite at last for about one page, and you see none of it. Sucker! These are good.
That these is are really good.
These are really good. Oh, Battleborn's good. I should do...
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to do the Battleborn ones. Battleborn, the first one. The one where a Spartan must adopt four dysfunctional, emotionally traumatized 17-year-olds to combat the Flood. No, not the Parasite. The Rain is the real enemy of this book. Featuring humans dressing up as Covenant for the concert. Hell yeah. And then for the book that we'll be reading tonight, Battleborn Meridian Divide. The one where those traumatized teens from Battleborn get even more traumatized, featuring trauma induced by continued alien invasion and death, Oni cover-ups, and foreigner foolery that makes you get really high before dying.
Alien?
Unless you're a Spartan.
Ah!
Does not feature a third book.
You know, I was actually kind of depressed about that when he said that. That at this time there's not going to be a third book.
Yeah.
That sucked.
Well, it's just not at this time.
Yeah, well, the way it was worded, it didn't sound like it's going to be anytime soon either.
No. Yeah, that Cassandra Rose Clark tweet made it seem very...
Yeah, you know, it's...
Very set in stone.
I thought that the books had done well. I mean, I enjoyed them, and I'm not even the target audience. But I guess...
Yeah.
I guess the target audience didn't like it, so, anyway.
Who knows what is the main reason behind it. But yeah, give this a read. Eric Ebu asked for the link. I've dropped the link in the chat. It's definitely worth checking out. There's some good ones in here.
That's almost as good as the poopy list.
The what?
The poopy list. Old joke. It's old. It describes all the different types of poop.
Well, like are you just saying like generically, or is there a proper list of some kind that you're referring to?
No, it's out there somewhere. I haven't seen it in a long time. Okay. Back then, it was actually on paper. This was before the interwebs. But it is called the poopy list, and it describes all the different types of poop. Like, you know, the atomic poopies.
Oh, when I thought you were talking in relation to Halo.
No, I'm not talking about relation to Halo.
Okay.
Just random thought.
Okay. Okay.
It's just a funny list.
I'm on the same page with you now.
If you can make it all the way through it without cracking a smile, you are a better man than me.
I know I couldn't.
Because I made it to, like, two before I was on the floor laughing.
I'd probably be falling at the same point, to be honest. Both me and my wife would probably be. Over on the community content side of things, we've got Podcast Evolved with two new episodes. We have Mission Debrief, episode 113, which is Halo Wars 2, The Halo. And we have Build with Blocks, Halo Infinite Mega Construct Set Breakdown, Part 2. Over on the... Actually, that's all the podcast updates that we have for this week. Not a lot going on, surprisingly.
Quiet week.
Not a lot on YouTube either. The only ones I really want to call out for this week is Halo Cannon, or Toa Freak, has done his primer series for Halo 3 ODST.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're new to ODST, please go check that out. He's been doing a really good job with those primer series. Installation 00 has 7 Mysteries of Zeta Halo, something that folks might be interested in watching, especially with Halo Infinite taking place on Zeta Halo. There's a lot of history behind that Halo.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll get to explore some of that in the game for those that are not as book inclined or external fiction savvy. That'd be nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
We have Late Night Gaming, Why the Banished Succeeded Where the Storm Covenant Didn't. It's another good one to check out. We have General Heed, Breaking Halo 3's Cutscenes with the Acrophobia Skull. Just a bunch of different ways that you can actually break the cutscenes by using the Acrophobia Skull. So, an interesting one to check out.
And he does mean break, because he does break them.
Because it breaks campaign scripts, or it just breaks how the campaigns are, or the cutscenes are displayed. For those that are into Halo Wars 2, Team Respawn has a kind of a take on the patch notes or the patches that got implemented with Halo Wars 2 in the most recent update. So they have a video over there on that. And then Mint Blitz has a video titled The Australian Halo Experience, where he just goes ham and really just pwns everyone. Like, he's probably the best Halo player in Australia, I think, hands down.
I'm sure he rates right up there in the world, too.
I would love to see him compete in a free-for-all tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And see how well he does. Or even on a team. I'm sure he'd be a good team player, too.
Yeah.
But definitely see him in a free-for-all tournament and see how well he does would be really cool.
I have to make one mention. I Spy Full featured a Halo 3 game type, custom game, called Ice Cream Man. And I'm glad that it made it. I'm glad it made it over to the Master Chief Collection.
I mean, all the popular ones, I believe, probably did to some degree.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. I mean, heck, even Fat Kid made it over.
I mean, there's, of the ones I found out there, there's only been a few of them I actually recognize. Some of them are classics. Unfortunately, Fat Kid made it.
Yep. You knew that one was going to make it.
I was really hoping somebody would forget. Like, everybody? Anyway, Ice Cream Man's a lot of fun.
We just don't have to play it. Ever.
I don't download it. It's not on my Xbox.
That's fine. We Podtacular just will not be playing it during game nights. And that's that.
343, can I please have more safe spots for custom games?
That would be nice.
That's the other
one. That would be
nice. Through too.
No kidding.
That's the only one I wanted to call out.
Okay. Very good, then. Over on the art side of things, we have a few new pieces to talk about here. We have 3 from Tom Jurassic, utilizing a lot of the San Diego Comic-Con figures. So he has one with the Halo 3 Master Chief wielding a laser, one with the Halo CE Master Chief wielding the CE Magnum, and then the Halo 2 Master Chief with dual SMGs. And he said that the Halo 2 one is his favorite out of that SDCC exclusive set. Still pissed how those got sold and that I didn't get one.
Oh, yeah.
But that's that.
Well, I mean, I wasn't even going to try to get one, and I wasn't happy about the way they sold those.
Yeah, and why would you sell it at the same time that everyone's watching the Xbox stream to try to catch Halo Infinite news? Like, why would you do that? Whose bright idea was that?
I'm going to say left hand and right hand weren't talking to each other.
We saw how well that worked for the Halo 5 promotional cycle, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Anywho. Vin Gattuso has a couple of Fireteam Osiris stuff that he's been working on. He's done a Halo... Or he's done a Holly Tanaka Gen 3, heavily referenced by Isaac Hannaforth's early Spartan drawings for Reach. So he has lots of cool renders for his Holly Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
He has a tease for a Falcon that he's been working on.
It's all fuzzy!
Oh. Yeah, it's all fuzzy. He said he's made some modifications to it, so we'll have to wait for that one. And then Pixel Flare has worked on some of his own streaming assets, some stream graphics, which look really cool. Has his signature purple and blue, then a pic of Uber Nick to showcase the web frame model of Uber Nick just going like surprise Uber face. Nick's
really into what he's playing.
And shocked and confused and all that. Yeah.
Huh?
Ezel VFX has a tease as well. Just has Soon on it. And it looks like we have the back of a cruiser going through some debris and maybe some plasma arcs in the background. So a little tease there. And then we have a couple of commissions from Ascend Hyperion. One of them for Green Skull.
Yeah. That's looks like it's Halo 4 Spartan.
I can't tell if that's Halo 4 or 5.
No, I mean the aesthetic that that Green Skull had for his Halo 4 Spartan. I know it's not his Halo 4 Spartan. I'm sure it's a
it looks more creation. Halo 5-ish.
Yeah.
To me. But I honestly don't remember. Not sure.
I honestly don't think I've seen Green Skull's Halo 5 Spartan.
I guess that's probably the closest that we have. I honestly don't know. I don't look at Spartans that closely these days. Like, ever since... Like, Halo Reach was the last time I really paid that much close attention to other people's customizations.
Well, the deal is the customizations were also a lot easier to spot.
True, they're a lot more able to differentiate between.
Right. Where in Halo, especially Halo 5, a lot of the different armors, they just kind of knit. They blend together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't really stand out to where you would see them in normal gameplay.
Right, just kind of, it blends in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it for the art stuff. We head on over to a couple of tweets. We've got our Halopedia Trivia Tuesday and Lore Thursday. You want to take those, GT? gotcha. Yeah, they threw four pictures into this tweet.
All right, let's see. For Halopedia's Trivia Tuesday, did you know that for the 2008 San Diego Comic-Con, a unique design EVA Spartan called Hellspartan was made based on McFarlane's most famous creation, Spawn? The character Spawn. The Hellspartans are counted as a what if scenario. What if what? By 343 Industries, if Spawn blended with Halo.
I did not know that. But granted, I was not really tracking Halo collectibles at that time in my quote unquote Halo career.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really until like 2012 or 13 where I really started getting serious about collecting Halo paraphernalia.
It is a pretty good... I mean, it's a nice nod to the Spawn character.
It looks like it, just from the picture comparison. Has what's the big... It's not orbital. Is it? That face mask in Halo 3?
I can't think what it is.
Because the Halo 3 armor.
EVA?
It's either EVA or Orbital, one of the two.
Yeah.
EVA, says on the box. So there you go.
Oh, yeah, right there. For Lore Thursday, given to the Master Chief by Jacob Keys on the Pillar of Autumn, the M6D pistol is a force to be reckoned with. Don't you know it? It has seen use throughout the Human Covenant War and was a common sight in the hands of Spartan twos. One shot across the gulch. Oh.
Three shot
kill. To learn more, visit Halopedia.org.
Yep. Halopedia also has a Steam curator page that is now set up.
Cool.
So yeah, it's where they kind of pull together a lot of the Halo games. So for those that are on Steam regularly and want to find just all the Halo games, or I think they also include a couple of the other games that are closely related to like some of the mod titles for like Arma 3, like Operation Trebuchet and that kind of stuff. I think they might have those kinds of games in here. Not entirely sure. But yeah, they have Solaris, Arma 3, and Sins of a Solar Empire. But yeah, just a fun little thing in case you're wanting to have that kind of ease of access on Steam, since Halo is supporting Steam a lot more these days.
Mm-hmm. Because people have a problem with the Windows Store, and I don't know why.
And, you know, it is what it is. So it is time for Battleborn Meridian Divide. The last book of the series, as we talked about earlier, at least for now. But, yeah.
Until further notice.
Exactly. Which
will probably be forever.
I just now got your Twitter DM.
I thought maybe your phone might be there or something. But, you know, Twitter's always real fast about, you know, notifying people.
Yeah. Anyways, so I'm going to, like I do every time that we do a book review, if you want the full breakdown of the book, then I highly recommend you go check out some other podcasts like Podcast Evolved, Finish the Fight, Halo Conversationalists. They do a pretty good job of covering every minor and major detail in the book. We're just kind of going to generally go over the book and our thoughts and reactions to it, what we think about how it interfaces with other books, the Halo universe, all that kind of stuff. So with that said, with that caveat, it's time for us to discuss Meridian Divide, the continuation of the first Battleborn book. So GT, you want to start kicking things off with their training regiment?
Well, as we let me start off with a little refresher. When we ended the first book, they were asked if they wanted to join Oni. And they all said yes. And they joined as a militia team. They're not really part of the UNSC, but they're trained by Oni for the militia, if that makes sense.
Right, right. They're getting UNSC training so they can, like, Oni's actually doing something kind of nice here where they're not just completely, well, I'll put an asterisk next to that. they're not necessarily like, indoctrinating them. In, yeah, yeah.
You've read the book, some, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll put a little asterisk on this for now, but they're not just straight up indoctrinating them into the UNSC or to be Oni spies or whatnot, but
no,
basically giving them the training they need in order to continue their what they kind of started in the previous book of, well, Covenant's looking for something, they're looking for some foreigner artifacts, and since you're kind of the best thing that we have right now, and you survived the whole Covenant onslaught and saved almost 300 people.
They got two things going for them. One, they're familiar with the area that they're going because they live there, Room Shamir.
Yep.
Whatever.
Wait, what?
And two, they have already shown a talent for evading the Covenant with the help, with the training from the Spartan.
Yep.
The book opens up. They are in a training scenario. They're playing Capture the Flag, except for they don't have a normal flag. One of the members is the flag, Evie.
Right.
They are going up against a UNSC AI, and he has control of a simulation. and they've been at this for like 36 hours or something like that.
Was it that long?
Yeah, it was long. They are working together. They managed to dig up a comm pad, and they're talking with Evie, and they're trying to figure out where she is. Well, they finally figured out that each of them only has part of the information. You know, it's like, you know, there's two keys to lock, and each one of them have one key. So they finally figure that out. And to put this perspective, they are training with what it sounds like live rounds, just to let you know.
I mean, the Spartans did it while they were kids. Why can't these kids do it?
Yeah, right, sure. They've only been trained for 6 months. But they get put through hell in this training scenario.
Yep.
And upon completion of it, where they do actually find Evie, they are immediately sent to debrief. Because, you know, after you've been sweating in a training scenario for the last 3 days, you want to go right into a debrief. Yay!
It's just the best.
Yeah.
Not really.
One thing that I will note is you really start to see the individual characters change in their attitudes.
It's a very stark difference between how we saw them in the first book and how we see them in the second book. It's night and day almost.
They are much more adult in their thinking in this book. They still have the teenage thought process, but they're much more analytical in their thoughts, and you start to see their personalities. Well, I wouldn't say
solidify
their personal differences work their way in there more. Like in the first book, Dorian, you know, he's the wild child. He's the headbanger, the rocker. He's also sympathetic with the insurrectionists. He thinks that the UNSC is out to get everybody. That they don't have any kind of heart or anything. And you start to see that more at the beginning of the book, just in the way his demeanor is and the words that are chosen when he speaks.
I didn't pick up on that early on.
Yeah.
Interesting.
On the other hand, you have the other boy's name. Can't think of it now.
Victor.
Victor, yes. Sorry. Victor, you start to see him as more of the soldier boy. You know, he wants to enlist in the UNSC. He wants to be a soldier. He wants that life. Where Dorian is the stark opposite of that. He doesn't want the life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's doing this for very selfish reasons. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But after this initial training scenario, they go back and they debrief. They are on a base close to Meridian. If I remember,
yeah,
it was on one of the other moons, which happens to be an old insurrectionist base.
Which now the UNSC has basically taken it over as kind of a spy base for monitoring Meridian with everything that's been going on with the Covenant. Which, I mean, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, they go through a section where it's more of the, you know, more of the mundane stuff of a military life. You know, it just basically the day-to-day operations. They have a section where, you know, they have Dorian and Evie doing KP, you know, in the communications lab or communications building, stuff like that. You hear a little bit more about how their personal lives have changed since the first book. Since they've been in training, of course, they're not allowed to speak directly with their family. They can only send them messages, which are, of course, heavily censored by Oni.
Yep.
Not to give away anything. And you start to see...
Because Oni does what Oni does.
Yeah. Well, you also start to see the toll that Saskia's parents' choice of occupations is taking on her. She's really feels more alone. Yeah, she does make comments to the point that it's nice that Evie's father kind of adopted her as his other daughter, and they try to include her in their family's type gatherings, things like that. But, you know, there's still, Saskia still has not been able to get a hold of her parents. Well, they
this
have
whole
not,
time.
She has not been able to get a response from her parents. So she doesn't know if they're alive or dead or if they're in hiding or what, which, you know, that can wear on someone. You know, that they kind of go through that in this next area right after that. And then they get called to the principal's office. No, they get called in to receive their orders.
Yep.
And this is where the Oni commander, Owen, the Spartan, and the four kids or young adults receive their orders as to what's going on, what they are going to do. They're going to be dropped or brought back down to Meridian to help a group of Meridian militia either capture or destroy the artifact that the Covenant's looking for in Broom-Sur-Mer.
Yep.
And this is where you really start getting that Soldier Boy vibe from Victor. Because all he hears is, we're going to be tour guides.
Right. Yeah. When they first got down there, and then a few of the, like the first missions where it was mostly reconnaissance, I think they were kind of each assigned to an individual team to be like just checking things out.
Yeah. They were exactly that. They were tour guides. They were guiding teams into Broom-Sur-Mer so they could surveil what the Covenant was doing. On the way down, their dropship gets hit, and they actually make it to Meridian via drop pod.
ODST drop pods.
So everybody's happy about that.
Yeah.
That's how heavily defended Meridian is when it comes to the Covenant occupation. To the point where UNSC is having trouble getting ships through back down. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, the Covenant itself is also having trouble getting ships on the ground. But you start to see, and it's not too long after this, you start to see the tide turn where things start getting a lot hairier for the people on the ground, more unsafe.
I think there were a few instances where they had mentioned that their resupply drop wasn't able to make it because of all the fighting that was going up in orbit. And at one point, they were going to... Well, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but they were going to get extracted after a couple of ops. But extraction wasn't possible because of how heated the airspace was around Meridian.
Yeah, they've actually created a couple of, they engaged the Covenant a couple of times in a distraction mission so that they could get basically eyes on the object to see what the Covenant has found, because the Covenant did find something.
And they weren't dealing with Locusts anymore. They had a full-on Scarab that was excavating the Forerunner artifact
that they managed to blow up.
Using some very unstable explosives.
Yeah. What did they call those?
It began with an S.
Yeah. Shredders or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Anyway, you arm this thing and it's like you breathe the wrong way and they explode. I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, one of the descriptions was like human strength enough wouldn't be enough to make them detonate. But if you jostle them just right, or you drop them from any considerable height, they are that unstable where they could blow up.
Let's put it this way. Owen says, I have to be really careful when arming one of these.
Yes. Because, you know, super strength and super speed and all that.
Boom. Anyway.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Owen has to demonstrate how to arm on one. And he actually arms it. And then they're like, okay, what are you going to do with it now? He's like, well, we are about to launch a distraction mission.
In an hour.
Thanks. Like, you're going to carry this thing around for the next hour?
Yeah, so I think they had the first recon mission was to kind of get a laydown of what the Covenant was up to.
Well, yeah, Victor and his team went in to get a look at the site. And that's when they found the Scarab and that they found that the Covenant had actually found something and were trying to get it out of the ground. The second mission was the first distraction mission to go in to kill the Scarab. To slow down the Covenant so that they couldn't excavate the artifact anymore.
So I thought there was a second one, or was it part of the first one where I think it was Saska took them into the tunnels to try to find a spot where they could see or get close enough?
That was one of the recon missions, yes.
Okay, I think that was the second one. But
that was basically she was basically found where they were digging. The second recon mission was with Victor, where they actually got eyes on the site.
Okay,
that's where Victor climbed out onto a tree to get line of sight on the site. The third mission
and jumped from a tree to a tree.
Yeah, jumped out a window into a tree, literally.
Yeah.
The third mission is where they went in and destroyed the Scarab. And then the fourth mission that they did was when they went in to retrieve the artifact. And between the third and the fourth mission is where you get a real sense of loss, to where you can see that the UNSC is losing bad. Because between the first strike and the third action, where they destroyed the Scarab, and this action, the Covenant was actually able to rearm and resupply with fresh bodies, more equipment, and they had engineers. Well, they always have the engineers. They did make mention that the engineers were, you know, before they attacked the Scarab, they did make mention of the engineers examining the artifact.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
But like I said, between that third and fourth is where you get the real sense that stuff's going downhill fast.
Mm-hmm. And we find out even more kind of after the fact, because on the mission, Oni obviously didn't have good intel. So when pretty much all the other militia went in to be the distraction or kind of do that plan A to retrieve the artifact,
mm-hmm.
they lost 70% of their forces. And this was led by Owen. So, and I forget, was it Dorian or Evie that came up with the idea to try to contact the AI?
That was Dorian.
And so they did that to see if they could get eyes on where the artifact was and where
they went through the tunnels. You know, like they did in the first book.
Yep. See if there's a way they could get to the artifact via the tunnels instead of having to go on top.
They pitched it to Owen as a, quote, backup plan. Mm-hmm. In case the retrieval team couldn't make it to the artifact. But, and this is where things get interesting. Pay attention closely. They only had one set of retrieval gear, you know, stuff they used.
The Forerunner retrieval gear, the stuff they used to handle
Forerunner objects, the safety precautions.
Yep.
And they were under strict orders not to touch it, not to try to retrieve it. Can anybody guess what?
Plan A failed, so Plan B had to be enacted.
Yeah,
and it just so happens that there was a part of the tunnel exposed when they destroyed the Scarab and the shield,
mm-hmm.
that the artifact was kind of just sticking through.
This is one thing I kind of liked about this. They field strip a weapon to use the barrel as a lever to get this artifact out of the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm in the middle of a war zone. Do I really want to field strip my assault rifle to use it as a pry bar? No. But I guess what you got to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. They make it out just in time as the tunnel's collapsing. Because as they're approaching, mm-hmm. of course, with all the explosions and everything, the tunnel's unstable and it collapses shortly at. Well, while they're making their way to it, they do have one section collapse. And even better is they're in the dark tunnels and nobody's got a flashlight.
Yep. They only have the one data pad with the map light.
They literally have the light from the holo projector on one of their comm pads.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep. So, of course, every once in a while, someone would hit into something and scare everyone else because there's a big clatter. Uh-huh. And it's like, no, it's just me. I'm fine.
What part of be quiet do you not understand?
I can't see where I'm freaking walking.
But they do make it out.
Yep.
And Dorian was under the impression that this would guarantee their ride off the planet. Because you've already, up to this point, you're already starting to see that insurrectionist type attitude from him. Is that the Oni sent them down there to die. To sacrifice their lives.
For their agenda.
For Oni. Like there's no other reason that Oni would actually send people down there. No good reason for it. And this theme, it gets brought up multiple times when it comes to Dorian throughout the rest of this book.
Yep. Even and pisses him off
even
at one
to
point.
The point where he said, he actually flat out states that, this was supposed to be our ticket home, this artifact. They do manage to get it back to camp. Their original camp was attacked by Banshees. So they had to relocate to a new camp.
Well, that was after, though, the...
After the artifact.
Right, and after someone played with the artifact.
Yes. that's the part I was getting to.
Okay.
Evie has a knack for solving puzzles. Her father would give her stuff like Rubik's Cubes to solve in differing difficulties. And she took a crack at this alien artifact because, everybody wants to play with an alien Rubik's Cube. And she gets it to show a map. Owen, they figure out that it shows a map and it's pointing to another location on Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
And through discussions with Oni, which, they're really happy that she activated the artifact.
Not really.
And I'm full of crap too. they discussed the proper way to handle Forerunner artifacts and the fact that Evie did none of it and to never do it again.
But since she solved it, might as well act upon the intel.
Since she's already screwed with it. they bring the experts in and they talk about what it did, what she did to make it work. And then they figure out that it's pointing to another city on Meridian. This one's
Annecy.
And it's to the north, well to the north, to where it's actually a several hour flight.
It's basically on the other side of
the planet. They are told by Oni that they are to evac the area and go to Annecy to see where this artifact points to find what this artifact points to.
Right, because they can't evac them where they are right now.
Right. They basically said they are unable to get a ship down there, and they estimate that they should be able to have one in a few days.
3 days, something like that.
3 days or something like that. So they break camp, grab what they can, And then they have to hoof it to the next town to pick up a transport to fly them around the planet. In the process, they are attacked by Covenant, and they get pinned down.
Lose a few more folks, including the actual commander of that militia squad. He got chopped up by a brute shot.
Yeah. They were attacked by Sangili and brutes. Somewhere, Owen comes up with an energy sword. Oh, yeah, I just found this laying on the ground. Ha, slice, slice, slice. Anyway, Owen acts as a distraction to allow the regular Marines to evac to the transport. And then at the last minute, he joins them.
I love how he joins them. Like it, the ship starts to take off, and then he just jumps in.
Yeah.
All Spartan style. It's like...
Yeah, he uses his thruster pack.
The teams were like, wait, are we waiting for Owen? And then literally 2 seconds later, clunk. Clear. I thought that was funny.
Uh-huh. But, you know, in situations like that is where you still see the teen side of them. Where it's admirable yes. that they don't want to leave Owen behind, or leave anyone behind, for that matter. They don't understand that there are situations where it is necessary. Like in this situation, Owen chose to be the distraction. So that the rest of them could get away. Because Owen knew that if they stayed there and fought, they would all die. And then their mission is over.
Yep. Big picture thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Not something the teams have picked up on yet.
Yeah, this is something that Victor is starting to see. Victor, Saskia, and to a point, Evie are starting to see. But Dorian still has a very closed mind when it comes to this type of thinking.
Yep.
Remember how I said very selfish reasons for going back to Meridian? Anyway, they take the flight to Annecy. They get there. And then the first thing they comment on is on how cold it is. Well, no kidding. It's to the north. Anyway.
And how dark it was.
Yes. It's very dark.
Especially for a city that just got evac'd the previous day.
Yeah. Well, previous week or something like that.
No, they said like when they arrived, it was yesterday.
Yeah. And in that discussion, one of the Marines makes the comment, you know, they were talking about it, and one of the Marines says, no, they were evac'd out of this.
They were attacked 6 months ago.
Yeah, they were attacked 6 months. Yeah, 6 months ago.
It was the first place to get hit in the Meridian attacked.
Yeah, because the kids were trained for 3 months after Broom Shamir was attacked, and Annecy was hit 3 months previous to that. And Dorian, you just see Dorian go off his frickin' rocker about it.
Yep, because Owen lied.
Owen lied. He said that the UNSC and the Meridian Air Force had been fighting the Covenant for a few weeks, keeping them off the planet, when it turns out it was a few months, which, in Owen's defense, they didn't need to know that.
Yeah.
And they have a good reason. Is it right? Debatable. But they have very good reason for not broadcasting this.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want people trying to evacuate the planet flying right into a Covenant armada.
Yep. And especially when the whole planet was being attacked.
But the way Dorian sees this is if we do, I wouldn't be out in the middle of the ocean. What makes you think that because that's where he lost his bandmates. When they took the gig on the yacht out in the ocean and they were attacked by the Covenant. Who's to say that they would have survived if they were still in town? Because even in town, not everybody survived. There were a lot of losses in town as well. Not mm-hmm. just on that ship. And so this is where you see Dorian get a very narrow view of the world.
Yep.
And it's very selfish of him to think of it this way. I understand where the character's coming from. But again, big picture thinking. He's thinking about a very little picture. And you really get that very insurrectionist vibe from him. And, you know, throughout the rest of the book, it gets even stronger up until a point.
Yeah. I mean, there was one point where, like, he just completely was not wanting to help out at all with missions because, like,
the only thing he did was he went out scavenging for supplies that they needed. You know,
it's like, if they're going to lie to us about this thing, then what else is Oni and UNSC lying to us about?
Oh, lots of things. Lots of things. It's the military.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's one of those operational need-to-know things.
When it comes to the military and when it comes to need-to-know, they couldn't walk a straight line if you strapped them to a set of railroad tracks. And I'm not defending that thought process. It's just necessary.
Right.
But anyway, on to the next part. It's just this first part of the first chapter of them in Annecy. It's basically them kind of getting their bearings. Of course, they flew there with very little supplies. Basically,
so scavenging.
The ammo that they were carrying in their pockets and that was in their weapons. They were about town scavenging clothes, food, heating units, weapons, ammunition. They did manage to find a warthog.
Yeah.
You know, because apparently they just leave warthogs laying around everywhere.
And a warthog, yay.
Yeah. The funny thing is, Saskia volunteers to ride
turret.
As the turret gunner. When
Owen was just like, okay, sure? But just make sure that you hold on tight, and it has a lot more recoil than what you're used to with an assault rifle.
Just remember, that has a lot of recoil. And Saucy is like, I know. Well, I mean, you know, with her folks' weapons and, you know, background, so.
Right. So, for the most part.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for the most part, they pretty much went around, got everything they needed, and then started their scouting of where this waypoint from the artifact could be leading to.
And they went on a recon mission. It was Owen, Evie, and Saskia, I believe it was. And they let the artifact lead them to the point that they wanted it, or that they were looking for. And the interesting thing is the artifact really wanted to be where it wanted to be. To the point that it basically started dragging Evie along with it.
Mm-hmm. And what do they find is another Covenant shield.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, Covenant.
Apparently the Covenant had found the artifact in Annecy.
But the perimeter wasn't that well guarded, or not as guarded as they would think.
It was lightly guarded, because, of course, the
not Covenant, for long, though.
The Covenant had been there for 6 months. And then they also had an interesting time with the artifact, because, like I said, it was drawn to this structure. And this is what they found. They found a structure underground. Then they had a shield covering the entrance. This artifact struck the shield with enough force to alert the local guard. It was Spartan Owen had to retrieve the artifact, and he struggled with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could escape. On the way back, they did get split up. Saskia and Evie, they got split up and from Owen, running away from the Covenant.
Yep.
And then, you know, they found their way back. Of course, Dorian, the wisecracker, they run into him first. They're like, about time you came back. Really? Maybe you ought to get off your butt and do something. Because, you know, at this point, you know, Owen, or at this point, he had just basically shut down.
Yeah. He was having none of it.
Yeah, you know, they all had a discussion with Owen, and Owen basically said, you didn't need to know.
What difference would it have made?
Yeah. You know, what's the point? You know, I needed you to be focused on the situation at hand, not that the world had been under attack for 6 months or 3 months already.
Yep.
And on the other hand, I didn't have the clearance to tell you anyway.
Which, so, that's what one of Dorian's big peeves is.
Yeah. He's the guy that's always got, well, you know, throughout the whole series, he's always had the, you know, he's the guy that has trouble with authority.
Yeah.
You know, he's right, everybody else is wrong. He doesn't like to be told what to do. And this just reinforces that fact just over and over again. And just a side note for this book, this is one thing that I understand what they were doing, what the writer was doing with Dorian's character, but it got to be really annoying just how many times that fact was reinforced. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you watch that same video too many times.
Right? Yeah.
You've seen that movie on TV too many times. Yeah. And it got very distracting because you'd be getting into the story and then all of a sudden they tangent off on this again. I'm like, okay, you've established that. Fine. There's another way to deal with Dorian than to just keep rehashing the same crap. Don't get me wrong, it didn't detract from the book at all. I still enjoyed the book. But that is just one of those little pet peeves.
It's just like it was one too many times.
Yeah.
But,
well, anyway, they formulate a plan to get into the structure to find out what's there.
So same tactic as before, distraction teams, and then they sneak in.
Well, not so much sneak.
Go
in while everybody else is looking the other direction. Way they get in is they bring the artifact back to the site.
Yep.
They pull it out of its case. They get close enough. Evie's got a hold of it. It literally picks her up off the ground and starts dragging her towards the shield. Saskia and Victor both grab hold of her feet
to try to slow her down. Dorian's with them, too. All four of them were there.
Yeah, all four of them were there, but I think only two of them actually grabbed hold of her.
I thought they all did.
They may have.
Just not Owen. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Owen didn't. But it's so basically dragging them through the air towards this bubble, towards this shield. And finally, she lets go of it. It smacks this Covenant shield so hard, it punches through it and disables the shield.
Wait, and then everybody runs down
inside the structure. Yeah.
Okay. But I thought there was one part where, like she jumped and like to tell them, like, get ready. And then they basically just kind of flew through the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they did do that. But yeah, it's like, okay, that's an interesting way to get across the field. Be dragged.
Look, Ma, I can fly.
Hey, Ed, hold my beer. Anyway, they get down into the structure. They get down into the structure, and the artifact they found in Broom Samir acts as a key to activate this artifact. And when this artifact activates, you ever heard the description of someone on acid? That's kind of the description this is. The world kind of gets turned upside down, and people are walking on walls and ceilings and
breathing smoke or turning into smoke.
Yeah, really bad hallucinations. And all four of the kids are having these, well, all five of them are having the hallucinations, but the kids, since they're not in Mjolnir, are incapacitated. So Owen grabs them and drags them out of the structure along with the key. They kind of catch their breath and then they evacuate because now that has drawn the attention of the Covenant, and, you know, they're coming back. So they regroup at their base, and they're talking with Oni, and they're talking with the Forerunner specialist describing what happened. And they determine that they either need to A, destroy it, or recover it. And then they'll be extracted.
Yep.
That, you know, they're given, they say, we'll have a bird in the area at this time to be able to distract.
It's about 3 days.
Extract you. And it's a couple of days away. Well, they formulate a plan, only to find when they get back to the site, they have, they call it a scanner. It's a three-legged scanner, but yeah. The way they describe it, it sounds like it's the size of a building.
I think of a locust type platform, but it's just a scanner. So,
well, no, the way it sounded to me, the way it's described, it sounds like it's much bigger than that. I mean, almost like scarab tall, not scarab big, but just scarab tall.
Oh, I didn't get that impression, but.
But that's just me.
Either way.
Well, when they start talking about as it's falling with the force that they're talking about, that they're indicating what if this thing should fall. If a locust falls over, it's not going to collapse the ground. But this thing sounds like it's pretty big and it's pretty massive to me. Anyway.
It sounds like more just falling to block off the entrance.
Yeah.
But. Well. And another thing was, there's another part of the Forerunner building or whatnot that has like a shield or some kind of doorway that only let them pass because they're reclaimers or humans.
Right.
So apparently the Covenant haven't been able to get in there.
Is basically there to try to crack the code so that it'll let the Covenant.
They can get in. Yep.
So they come up with an ingenious plan. They break up into two or three teams.
Yes.
They basically drive aircraft fuel truck out into the combat zone and set it on fire.
You know, as a distraction and smoke. And to generate to
smoke
it.
For cover.
Yep.
Well, the part they didn't count on is the ground is littered with basically styrofoam, which is very flammable.
Mm-hmm.
So the fire gets out of control really quickly.
Yep. And they had fire suppressant to try to control it and put it out once the distraction was successful, but they had no way. Yeah. They had no way to control it.
Yeah. Anyway, the fire it got out of control too fast. The Covenant recognized that they couldn't do anything with the fire. So they basically evacuated. By the way, they did make mention that there was a Covenant prophet there too, examining the site. So whatever this was of high interest to the prophets. Of course, we don't know what level the prophet was. I'm sure he wasn't a hierarch like Truth or Mercy, but he was probably one of the lower prophets.
Yep.
In the process of this distraction, you have Owen, Evie, and Dorian down in the structure trying to retrieve a statue that was in there that they believe is the device. They're using
and then
all
try to take a chunk of the wall, too.
Yeah. They're trying to take a chunk of the wall. And they're using all manners of different tools to try to recover these items.
Yeah, there's like mining lasers and excavation equipment, a whole bunch of different things. Yeah,
which it turns out Owen just grabs onto it, grunts, and then it comes out because Spartans do that.
Yep.
Need a crack an egg? Okay, here's a 5-pound sledge. Okay.
And it works, right?
It's cracked. But in the process. Saskia is trying to secure an escape route for the team in the structure, and Victor comes across her and another Marine that actually has a can of fire suppressant that they're trying to get away, and they have a little argument about who's going to do what. And Victor takes the can of suppressant to lay down a path so that the people in the structure have a path that they can evacuate through.
Yep.
And Saskia and the other Marine, they go ahead and evacuate. And then Owen, Evie, and Dorian, after they retrieve the artifacts, they start to evacuate. And
Owen has to pick up Victor because he's basically collapsed from smoke.
Yeah, smoke inhalation. They all do make it off the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The next scene is they're back at base. They've had an opportunity to, you know, of course, be debriefed, shower, food, get some,
clean up,
catch up on communications with the parents, things like that, or the family members. But Victor is in bad shape. He's basically in the ICU.
Mm-hmm.
And
the rest aren't allowed to see him.
Right. The rest are not allowed to see him. And, you know, they talk about some other stuff. They bring back up the, you know, how alone Saskia feels by not being able to get a hold of her family. You see where they move on to where the conspiracy theorist Dorian has formulated a reason why they can't see Victor without any facts at all. But Evie is also starting to get worried because this is several days that they have not been able to see. Well, as like per miracle, you know, they all get together and they all kind of go off out in the woods and they discuss this. Well, they come back to base and like, as if, you know, Oni had them bugged, they get called into the office.
Yep.
And they get filled in on Victor's condition. The problem is Victor, like I said, Victor was injured fairly seriously when dealing with the fire.
Yeah, he got third-degree burns on his skin and just kind of the smoke in his lungs, which normally they would not have a problem addressing at all.
But he's not responding to any treatments.
Yeah.
They're doing all they can just to keep him alive. And, you know, they tell the other three kids this, and then they say, well, we've got some news for you as well. We did your blood work, and it turns out you have the same problem Victor does.
But who doesn't?
Dum dum dum. And then they say, you know, they say, you know, they go through the whole experience in the room again, and they say the only one that doesn't is Owen. And they theorize that his genetic modifications are the reason why.
During the Spartan augmentation, yeah.
Yeah. So they tell him that they are administering that same therapy to Victor, and they're turning him into a Spartan.
Yep, they already got his parents' permission to go okay with it.
Of course, Dorian, in his infinite wisdom, well, did you tell his parents? Or did you ask his parents if he could do that? Mr. Conspiracy Theory. Like I said, by this point, the drum has been beat to the death
for me. Well, I mean, they said, yeah, we did.
And he's like, yeah, we did. And he's like, oh, dude, I'm sure. The Oni officer then offers them, we can do the same for you. We can give you the same genetic modifications. And we believe they will correct this problem. And the problem is they don't know if the next time they catch a cold, next time they break an arm, the next time they get bit by a mosquito is going to put them in the same situation that Victor's in.
Yep.
Their ability to heal has been severely hampered.
Severely compromised. Yep.
So, you know, it's like a lot of diseases that we deal with in this time. There's just diseases out there that make it impossible for your body to heal itself. There's diseases out there that make your own body attack itself. So they're offered to become Spartan. I find that as an interesting end to that because they do it. You know, they do tag the Spartan 4 program is that we're starting a new series of Spartan.
Yeah, we don't. This might be the Spartan Force.
Yeah, the Spartan Force. That's what it, I'm pretty sure that's what he just said.
Oh, I'm. I.
Base case.
Yeah.
Anyway, they want, you know, they're saying we'll want you to be part of this new class. So apparently there are 4 Spartans out there that didn't really want to be Spartans. That wasn't their end goal in life. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And Dorian's one of them.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, well, since the gang's doing it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Wasn't exactly super committed to the cause.
Exactly.
We'll see how well that turns out.
Saskia, on the other hand, she was actually kind of pumped about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is the conversation she had with Owen in the first book, where the Covenant took away his family, but the UNSC gave him another family, his fellow Spartans. And that's something that Saskia is desperately looking for, is a sense of belonging.
Yeah.
And you see that through both books. And I mm-hmm. like how, you know, how it's handled. It's done in a very respectful way.
Yes.
It's not just in your face all the time. Evie, she's like, she doesn't want to die, so she doesn't. Mm-hmm. But she's not totally against the idea of being a Spartan.
Yeah, she's kind of like one of those, like, trying to keep the mood bright.
Yeah.
So
she's dealing with a bad situation.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so this will work, and yeah, let's do it.
And Dorian's just being a jerk. And
yeah, well, we've seen that before.
I guess if you're doing it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to see when and if these characters return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, are they going to show up in Infinite? And, you know, maybe not right away. Like I said, with the plan they've announced for Infinite, it sounds like it's going to have a very long life cycle.
Yes.
When it comes to story.
Yep.
Which scares me, but it intrigues me too. You know, there's never been technically, well, save Spartan Ops, really a campaign expansion for any of the games. You know, yeah. It's always been the next game is the campaign expansion. That, you know, that's what furthers the story. So I'm very interested.
Yeah, we're going to get a platform here. So yeah, it'll be very different, but I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how many of these book stories influence what shows up in Infinite.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say dependent on the stories, but, you know, like the Lore Nuts Easter egg type stuff.
Yeah, just get to, like, see the influences.
These 4 characters show up in Infinite as, you know, a new character in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a lot to pull from.
Mm-hmm. It's like you could very easily bring these characters into Infinite, and all you have to do is introduce them as, you know, their names.
Yep.
And the only people it would really matter to that they're there are the people that have read the books. And anybody that's playing the game will, like, oh, okay, well, they're just new characters. Or they're just characters in the game.
Mm-hmm. It shouldn't really.
You know, you wouldn't have to provide any backstory or anything like that.
Yeah, all it can really do is just add to the depth of the content for the game if they decide to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with Pins. If they do, like, an improved Spartan Ops version, I would be up for that too.
Yes. Yes, definitely. So, overall thoughts of the book?
I really enjoyed
it. Pretty good
read. I know I'm not the demographic it was marketed to. You know, it's not marketed to a 50-year-old man. You know, it's marketed towards, you know, a teenager. But I still found it as an enjoyable read. The characters, you know, they had quite a bit of depth on the characters throughout the 2 books. Really, the only complaint I've got is the deal with Dorian. He was throughout both books, he was just, he was the most annoying of the characters.
That could be by design.
Well, I know it was by design. And to a point, I enjoyed it. But in my opinion, and this is my opinion, anybody else may think different, it was a little overdone.
I could see that. Yeah. Overall, I thought it was another great read. It definitely felt a little bit more of an adult read than a young adult read, kind of compared to the last book. Kind of seemed to make that graduating step a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So take the last book for maybe, I guess for comparison, junior high level, and then maybe this one's high school level, kind of difference as far as how the story was written and delivered throughout the book.
Well, we'll the pacing, middle school, high school, because there's no junior high anymore.
Or wait, the huh?
Oh, around here we got rid of junior highs. They're all middle schools now.
Oh, so through 8th grade is middle school?
Yeah, you go elementary, and then you move into middle school, and then middle school goes up to, like, goes from
8th grade.
Like, 8th, yeah, is 8th, 9th, and 10th, and then you have high school, which is would be 11th, 12th.
So, oh.
Really? Whatever happened to just junior high? I never had a problem with it.
Okay, whatever. So, sure. Yes, that works.
Oh, and by the way, Twitch, thank you for letting my channel host Podtacular 5 minutes ago. You know, we've only been on the air for 2.5 hours.
Oh, it said you hosted 50 minutes ago.
Oh, 50 minutes ago? Oh, wow. Yeah. I got timestamps turned off, but...
Yeah. Anyways, the pacing I thought was pretty good. I felt like there were some parts that were a little more rushed.
Mm-hmm.
Like it could have been a little bit more rounded out or fleshed out in some areas. Character development was really good. Although a lot of the ancillary characters that we saw didn't have a lot of additional stuff to them. I don't know if that's by design for young adult novels to not introduce so many characters with a lot of depth to them, or if that's some other reason, but I felt like a lot of the additional characters that we got didn't really have a lot of character depth to them. It's just a lot of surface level stuff, and the storytelling was good. So overall, good read. So next book we will be doing, we'll start on the not Master Chief trilogy. The one that, Troy Denning has been working on, the one that has another book coming out in October. So we will be working on Silent Storm next. So not sure when we'll do that one, but that will be the next book up for us to read
before October.
Well, we still have to do Oblivion too. So we've got Silent Storm, then Oblivion, and then Shadows of Reach, which will be coming out in October. But
hopefully before October.
We'll see. Depends on how schedules go. So to wrap things up, just want to thank everyone for tuning in on the live stream. We stream the podcast every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Twitch. And then we have our Fragment Friday hosted by GT on Fridays at 8:30 p.m. as well. If you're in the Discord, please make sure you vote for which game that you would like to play on Friday. And then you can check out Achieving Halo on Sundays. That's where I stream with the community and try to go after some achievements live on stream. And then you can follow us on social media. We are on Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, all that fun stuff. You can also support the show through a variety of different ways. You can do it through our Amazon affiliate link, podtacular.com/Amazon, when you're doing your checkout. You can help us out on Patreon by becoming a patron. Shout out to Confow, Frizzled, and Pins for your support over there on Patreon. You can subscribe to us on Twitch, or you can donate to us directly through PayPal if you want to do it that way instead. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, while that's still a thing, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If there's a podcast platform where you normally listen to podcasts and we are not on it, please let us know and we will get that figured out. And that'll be it for the show tonight. Hopefully we'll have DJ back next week. No topic currently set. We might try to get a guest on for next week. So stay tuned to our Discord and social media and we will let you know what is happening for next week's show.
I do have one game night update when it comes to PC. Mm-hmm. I have currently scheduled a PC game night for September 26th. That is the last Saturday of this month. So keep your eyes out on the Twitters. And we'll be starting that at probably 9:00 Eastern time. I have yet to work out the final schedule, but probably 9:00. And I'm
AM or PM?
That would be PM. AM, I will be at work.
And then that week we will not be doing a podcast because my wife and I will be taking a week-long trip, kind of making up for our anniversary trip we did not have a chance to take back in March. So we're kind of doing a half-year thing. So we will not be having a podcast on that week, which will be the 24th.
Well, in that case, I tell you what, you let us know.
And the DJ and GT show?
Well, no, I was going to say, maybe we'll do a PC game night on Thursday instead of the podcast.
It's not a bad idea.
You let us know if, and we'll get a poll out there.
Yep.
If Thursday would work better or Saturday would work better for you this month. So we'll be looking at, let's see, that would be either the 24th or the 26th. Which one would you prefer to have the game night on? In other words, which is more likely to be your free night?
Right. So check out Twitter and Discord for that. That's where we'll be putting the polls. So yeah. Any final thoughts other than the game night announcement?
Apparently, I get to eat dust.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the live stream and downloading the podcast. We will catch you all next week. And until then, keep on fragging them trucks.